from Colorado Public Radio. I'm Zachary Barr, in for Ryan Warner, and this is Colorado Matters. In 1987, when he was 15 years old, Timothy Masters was walking to the school bus in Fort Collins. He spotted what he thought was a mannequin, the type used to train people in first aid. He thought maybe some kids stole it and put it into the field as a joke. A few minutes later, while Masters was riding the school bus, he began questioning himself about what he'd seen.
Are you sure it was a mannequin? What if it was a body? And an even worse thought, what if it was somebody who was still alive and I just walked away from him?
Those doubts vanished as soon as Timothy Masters got to school.
And when I saw a police officer down in the office, I knew it wasn't a joke, it was a body. And he asked me, do you have any idea why I'm here, Tim? And I said, I think I've seen a body.
It was the body of Peggy Hetrick, who'd been murdered. Masters would ultimately be convicted of her murder and would spend nearly a decade in prison before he was released. Now he's written a new book, Drawn to Injustice, The Wrongful Conviction of Timothy Masters. Masters spoke with CPR's Ryan Warner about the day after the body was discovered, when he was interrogated for 9 hours by police.
It was hell. You know, having adult after adult, all these grown men and women telling me that I had killed this person who I'd never seen before in my life.
Telling you that?
Telling me that. He said, you did it, we know you did it, confess and make us easier on yourself. Over and over. And I didn't do anything but tell the truth the whole time, but they kept telling me, stop lying, tell us the truth. And at 15, that was really tough.
Did you ever give in?
I never gave in.
Did you ever want to, just to get them off your back?
You know, when you're being interrogated like that, you want to give in and just tell them what they want to hear to make it easier on yourself. But I couldn't do that. I didn't kill that person. I couldn't tell a lie and say I did.
What did they point to that made them think you were guilty?
Well, during the interrogation, as a high school student, as a junior high school student, I had drawn and written lots of violent, gory pictures, violent stories, graphically violent stories. And so they thought that since I had the propensity to create these fictional works of violence, that I had the propensity to do this in real life. And so I don't have any evidence of my theory, but I believe that as soon as the police walked into my bedroom and saw these stories and drawings and a knife collection that I had on top of that, they said, oh, this is the guy. And they never, even when no evidence came back to corroborate it, they stood and changed their opinion.
And of course, the title and frankly, the image on the book refers to this. The book is Drawn to Injustice. And on the cover of the book is one of these drawings of yours.
Yes.
Kind of known as the drag drawing.
Yes.
And what is it depicting? What is it you were drawing?
Well, Peggy Hetrick's body was discovered the 11th. And on the morning of the 12th, being 15 years old, having seen this body, I was very disturbed by it. And so that morning, in it was either driver's ed or health class, I drew a little doodle of a person being dragged. And so there's like a small person, probably a quarter the size of the person being dragged, dragging another person with a trail or furrows in the dirt from the person's heels that's being dragged.
And why did you draw it?
You know, I don't know other than it was disturbing to see what I saw, so I always drew pictures kind of making fun of things that bothered me.
Or like processing stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For example, I had a classmate who was killed by a car in 86, and I drew pictures of cars hitting kids making fun of that, but it was very disturbing to me that kid had been killed.
The investigation, I think it's fair to say, goes cold.
Yeah.
And about this time, you're in high school, you apply to be in the Navy.
Yes.
But there's still enough of a shadow hanging around that it's tough to get in.
Yeah, what happened was, the day before I was supposed to report to boot camp, I called my recruiter up and I said, what time do you want me to be at the office tomorrow? And he said, what? No one told you? And I said, told me what? He said, I think you better come down here. We need to have a talk. So I drove down to the recruiting office and the chief sits me down and he told me, Tim, we were notified by law enforcement that you were a suspect in a murder investigation and therefore you've been discharged. So I was discharged from the Navy before I even got to boot camp.
And I think what's really unsettling about this is there are no formal charges
No.
at this point. It's this It's just that you've been besmirched in a way.
Yeah. You know, the military was my dream because college wasn't in the future for me at that time. So this was my way to make a living, and it was my dream was just shattered over something I didn't do.
You eventually get into the Navy.
I did. My father hired an attorney. The attorney made a few phone calls, and it turns out they can't legally discharge somebody just because someone says they're a suspect. And so the Navy still got in the Navy and still was able to serve.
You spent nearly 10 years in the Navy.
8 years.
8 years.
Yeah.
And was there a point at which you thought detectives had stopped focusing on you?
Yeah, honestly, I thought it was over and done with when I left Fort Collins. I thought they must have realized I had nothing to do with it.
They must not have anything because they're not going forward. And so for years, it was out of your mind?
Yeah.
And you were eventually arrested. Tell me about that moment where it comes rushing back in.
So about 9 o'clock in the morning, there was a knock on my door. And when I answered the door, there was a local policeman there. And he said, "Timothy Masters, you're under arrest." And I said, "For what?" He said, "I can't tell you that." So they handcuffed me. And as they're escorting me out of the house, a man in a suit comes into the house and tells me, "Tim Masters, you're under arrest for the murder of Peggy Hetrick." And it took a second for it to click. And then I realized, oh, these are the Fort Collins people.
Where were you at this point?
This was Ridgecrest, California, where I owned a house.
You'd gotten out of the Navy.
Yep.
And they'd come to arrest you in California.
Yep, they did.
It took a while to make the connection for you.
Yeah,
what was happening?
I thought he was a district attorney, the guy that came in the house. It turns out it was Jim Broderick, who was the police officer most directly responsible for this whole thing.
Tim, you go into the trial knowing you are innocent.
Yeah.
How much confidence does that give you in a trial? Do you think this couldn't possibly turn out any other way but not guilty?
Absolutely. I was sure we were going to win the trial. There's no evidence against me. So I thought there was no way in the world I could be convicted for something I didn't do.
What were the moments in the trial that you felt best supported your case? Moments when you thought, that's a slam dunk. You know what I mean?
You know, almost all the cross-examinations, I thought my attorneys did a great job of bringing out the fact that there's no blood, there's no hair, there's no DNA, there's no evidence, there's none of her blood in my house, none of my blood, none of my DNA, no hairs from me at the crime scene.
How many years did you spend in prison?
I was in there for almost 10.
Almost 10.
Yep.
You get a sense from reading this book that just day in and day out is a kind of new nightmare. Would that be a way to describe it?
That's a good way to describe it. It's a mundane nightmare. It's like the movie Groundhog Day. It's the same day over and over again.
I'd like to have you read a selection from the book. Would you do that for us?
Sure.
We should say that you were at the Buena Vista Correctional Facility in Colorado.
Yeah. Oh, the horrible feeling of waking up in a cage. You know that feeling of disorientation we sometimes feel first thing upon waking? That feeling of, where am I? Often I would wake up in Buena with that feeling. And when the realization of where I was sunk in, I would be overwhelmed with depression. I wouldn't even want to get out of bed.
Was prison a dangerous place to be?
It was and still is a dangerous place, but I was very fortunate while I was there. I don't know how it worked out, but I never had any problems with people in there. I was ostracized, so...
Because of the nature of the crime.
Because of the nature of the crime, yeah. I was ostracized by the other inmates.
There was a sexual nature to this crime. She'd been mutilated and murdered.
Yeah.
And there's a kind of reputation or something that you have in a prison this way.
In prisons, in Colorado for sure, and I would say probably most prisons around the world, sex offenders are considered the lowest of the low. Even other inmates who have done horrible things hate them.
But that often makes it a more dangerous place, less dangerous place.
It does. A lot of the gangs will send new recruits into the cells of people who have been convicted of sex crimes to beat them up just as an initiation, and they think it's a good thing to do this to somebody.
But you escaped that.
Yeah, which is amazing. I don't know how it worked out that way, but.
You're listening to Colorado Matters. I'm Ryan Warner, and we're talking with Tim Masters, whose new book is called Drawn to Injustice, The Wrongful Conviction of Tim Masters. He spent almost a decade in prison for a crime that he did not commit. At what point did hope re-enter the picture?
Boy, it was a long time coming. Probably after Maria Liu and David Wymore had come on as my post-conviction attorneys, somewhere around maybe 2007, not too long before I got out, because I was pessimistic for the longest time. I lost at trial, and I never should have lost at trial. I lost my appeals to the state appellate court, and I thought I was going to win that for sure. They're going to see that I didn't get a fair trial. I lost at the state Supreme Court.
The legal team that takes up your case pokes a lot of holes in what was used to convict you originally.
Yeah.
Just explain a few of those, would you?
Generally, there was all this evidence that made it pretty clear to my defense team that Peggy Hetrick wasn't murdered at the scene where the body was dumped in that field. There was quite a bit of physical evidence in the crime scene photos that we found that proved to us that she was dumped there.
And that it was not a lone 15-year-old boy.
Yes.
It was probably two people.
Based on the crime scene photos, our investigator Barry Goetz believed two people transported the body into the field. And then we have another issue is we have these footprints made by a Tom McCann dress shoe. I was a 15-year-old kid who dressed like what we would call a stoner nowadays. I wouldn't have been caught dead in Tom McCann dress shoes. So the Tom McCann dress shoes were found right near the curb where the body was transported from the street into the field.
The footprints of these.
The footprints of the Tom McCann shoes, yes.
Yeah. Tell me about the moment you knew you'd be released and that there was a date.
I didn't believe it until the door of the courthouse hit me in the butt on the way out of the courthouse. Because I was so pessimistic by that point, until I was actually a free man, nothing was written in stone.
And what was that first night like outside?
Oh, I don't think I slept 3 or 4 hours. I was just so excited about being free. It was so nice to hang out with my family again after not seeing them. Well, a few would come to visit, but I hadn't been around them all in 10 years. And that first night to lay in a real bed, that was a great feeling. Because prison mattresses are not comfortable.
You settled with the city of Fort Collins in Larimer County for $10 million.
Yep.
Is that fair restitution?
When we first started the lawsuit, me and the attorneys discussed it, and that's what we felt would be fair, is $1 million for every year.
And that helps.
It helps to have peace of mind because, I mean, let's face it, with technology the way it is today, even though my criminal record is clean, anybody doing a background check on me for a job is going to see conviction, first-degree murder, and I'm not going to get the job. I wouldn't hire somebody with that, so.
But part of this was not just about making them pay. Part of this was about the difficulty of building a life after 10 years in prison.
Starting over at age 36. So I tell people that basically the first 36 years of my life were etch-a-sketched. I worked at building my life, building a career, and the police just come along and shook it and destroyed it.
What had changed the most?
You know, it might sound silly, but the biggest thing that I noticed was cell phones. Cell phones are everywhere now. I have one on me now. And when I went to prison in 98, I owned a cell phone, but it was the size of a brick. And its claim to fame was that you could store 100 phone numbers in it, you know. And the service was so expensive that I didn't even keep service on the phone. I just kept it around for 911 emergencies.
Tell us about your life now.
Well, now I have a few investments. Of course, I just finished writing a book. And I spend a lot of time working on the investments. A to-do list on my house, a mile long that never seems to end. And then my passion is working on cars, old hot rods. So I spend a lot of time fixing up old cars.
Was writing the book helpful, just in terms of like processing this kind of stuff?
You know, writing the book was the best therapy ever. It was, first of all, I didn't have to spend $100 an hour on a therapist. And second of all, to just vent all the things that I went through and put it down, it was very therapeutic for me.
Thank you so much for being with us, Tim. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Timothy Masters' book is called Drawn to Injustice, The Wrongful Conviction of Timothy Masters. He spoke with Ryan Warner. So far, no one else has been arrested in the murder of Peggy Hetrick.